All right. So I'm not going to exactly talk about what this sermon is about at the very beginning or kind of title it. I'm not going to do that. We're going to kind of go into that later because I want you guys to think about these questions that I'm going to ask leading into what the premise of this is all about. So we're going to do some give and take. So can I get somebody to run around a mic for me? Yeah, no Dugan. Adam's got to be Dugan. We'll just call him Adam. I don't want to think about that, no. Okay, so we're going to start off with questions. If somebody goes in for an interview for a job, how are you guys going to speak to your boss for that, or your potential boss for that interview? What are you going to bring to the table, and how are you going to prepare? Okay, why?
Just to make the impression. Basically, I don't want them to notice I'm not dressed nicely.
Okay.
I'm going to study up a bit ahead of time about what the job is and, you know, what they expect. And so I kind of know what, so I look like I know what I'm talking about when I get there.
Why? Why go through all that? So, I mean, yes, you said, so you know what you're looking fine, but why?
Well, I want him to think, or they to look at me like I know what I can handle, what they're expecting. And I'm curious enough to ask, and I'm going ahead of them so they don't have to hopefully train me as hard. I mean, it's kind of a two-way thing. It's not just about trying to impress them. But I guess I heard this line one time, you should always dress for the job, along with Al said, or know for the job that you want, not necessarily one you're applying for. So if you want management, but you're starting out at the bottom, you don't walk in like you're at the bottom. You walk in going, I know the job. And that there's a fine line between arrogance and knowing also. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What I'm thinking you might be looking for is to prove that you're suitable for that position. So
yep, that's
you
all,
would
that's
want
all part of it.
To, so for me, the reason why I would do what they chose to do, that's probably what I would have said, but my reasoning for it would be to prove to that person that I was speaking to that I was in fact suitable for that position.
So the person you're speaking to matters.
Yes. Yeah.
And holds the.
And you would speak with respect as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Crystal.
I do my best to be on time. And to be honest and respectful, because I represent the House, and I know that going in for an interview would give me an opportunity to spread the word.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else on that question? Andrea?
Considering that this has been my first week at a new job, I think for me also, going like into the interview and meeting with the directors that I had to meet with, it's also showing up as yourself, because they, we can always put a fake facade out there of who we want them to see, but it's really important to show up as who you really are,
mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you're trying to fit into a pie that's maybe not for you,
mm-hmm.
and it can just cause more trouble. But I also try to go into it with, as I'm sitting there trying to go through the interview, as in, okay, God, what do you want me to do here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if this is where I'm supposed to be, what does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you this week, I have a job in one particular thing, but he showed me where I think I'm going to be. I think I'm going to create a new job in where I'm at, but it's going to be a process to do that. And, so I think going into it, like, okay, God, if this is an open door for me, then what do I need to show up and how do I need to show up as?
Mm-hmm.
And not the perfect package.
Mm-hmm. And what happens if you don't?
Well, if you don't, if you show up to a job and you've put on a fake facade and you've acted all confident, like you've known everything, you get into it and you flop and you flounder, and it causes more problems than it does good.
Okay.
So I think when you show up, yes, you can talk about your attributes that are good and stuff, but also you can share, you know, I don't know this piece, and, you know, this may be a struggle, and if you're okay with that and you're willing to teach me and show me, then great, you know, because you want to bring something, but be open to learning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, it sounds like everybody's talking about is just going there with confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Just going there thinking you're going to, hey, I'm going to get the job. I'm just going there with real confidence and do your best at it.
Mm, but why?
Well, to make you feel good, you need the job. You need the job to make them think that you know what you're doing, and just playing, going there with confidence, saying, hey, I'm going to help these people and to help these people out, and they can help me out.
Does a person in front of you have the ability to hire you or fire you? Or to hire you or to not hire you? Does a person have the ability to do either one?
Yeah, they should. Yeah, they are. Usually it's HR, so.
Okay. So, the next question. Oh, John, go ahead.
It was brought up to show up on time, but to me it's, I always looked at getting a 40-hour week job is like a contract, okay? I'm going to give them 40 hours a week work for 40 hours a week pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so dependability every day is what it's about too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we're going to go into, we have a job. We're working our current job, whatever that job may be. And our boss asks us to do something. Everything is right and just. There's nothing wrong with it. But do we do it or do we not? And how does that go? Anybody have an opinion to if you do it or if you don't do it?
So my current position, I am kind of in, I guess my title is dual in the job, like I mentioned in previous testimonies. It was kind of created or is kind of created for me, for my skill set and stuff, and what I bring to the table. And every day that I go to work, when I'm asked to do something by the management or the owners or whatever, like even the smallest detail, like can you make sure there's no smudges on the door?
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, that calculates as yes, it's an immediate yes, because I will take care of that, that I can, I have the ability to do so, therefore I will. And it's part of my servanthood within me to help make the team and the life of others better.
My philosophy is if the boss asks you to do something, you're going to do it. But you can clarify the position, because if you're not trained for it, you can say, I'd be very happy to do that, but I'm not trained for it. And will you put somebody in charge of training me to do that?
Kathy had her hand up here.
Basically, just the same answer as Betty. I've been trained by my dad when I was little that when you have a boss, they ask you to do something, you do it. That's part of your job.
Mm-hmm. What happens if you don't?
Usually a reprimand. And not only that, but it looks bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, just the other day with my boss, we don't have somebody to plow our parking lot during the day. And I clean buses every day in the middle of the afternoon. I ran out of things to do. I went to him. I'm like, hey, I'd like to still get paid. Will you teach me how to plow?
Mm-hmm.
And he said yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so every time he asks me to do something, I do it, because every time I ask him for more hours, he does it.
Mm-hmm. Charlie.
A couple things. First, as someone who is working a job, you have a level of obligation to complete tasks that are given under the scope of what your responsibilities are. But additionally, there's a side to it. The person that's asking you to do something has recognized something in you, or has a level of respect for how you conduct yourself and do work, mm-hmm. that they know what the result is going to be by you walking it out. Mm-hmm. It's like, even if, like, regardless of where the person's at that's delegating to you, whether they're just delegating because they don't want to do it or they recognize it, that in you, but I think regardless, there's a level of recognition of the person doing the work that they know that quality work should and will be done. Mm-hmm. So that's why they're asking you. Mm-hmm.
And you would say it's fair to say that if they're asking you to do something, they recognize something in you, but you obeying them and doing what they ask is you recognizing something in them, correct?
Amen. Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. So what if your boss, if you do something and you have a habit not related to work, it doesn't really affect anybody, but a boss gets annoyed with it. Do you continue it? Do you stop it? Really doesn't have any thing one way or another. Do you continue it or do you stop it? Charlie?
I think if it inhibits your ability to do your job effectively, or it impacts the people around you, then you should cease to do it.
Okay.
I think we would all agree that you would cease to do it, but I think if we're all honest, the first thing that you would try to do is to find a way to get away with it.
Mm-hmm. That a lot of times that's what ends up happening.
Preach.
Unfortunately. Oops, my voice is not. Sorry, I did not realize I did not have that off yet. That's my bad. So, I'll go on to the next kind of set, and we'll make this one these next sets a lot quicker. If you're driving down the road, and you see the speed limit's 55 mile an hour, you're cruising down the road at 65 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour in a 55, but you know there's a police officer on that road. You know there's a police officer down there. Do you do it? Do you continue doing that?
Well, I'm going to have an honest answer about that. I was a speeder once before, and when I seen a po-po up ahead, well, you slow down, and then when you think he's gone, you just speed right back up. I've done it before, and I'm not going to lie.
But what makes you slow down?
Because you see him, you don't want to get caught, so then when you think he's gone, you just speed back up and be like, okay.
What does that police officer have the ability to do?
Well, pull me over and give me a ticket.
Okay.
I don't want that, so I don't speed when he's around. I'm just being honest, but I have slowed down since I've been up here, though.
Talitha?
I'm behaving. I'm so bad. If I have an officer following me, I can be following the letter of the law on the road, and I still get nervous thinking, okay, are all my lights working? Is my license plate cleared off so they can see it? You know, to a point when they finally pass me, you know, I'm like breathing a sigh of relief, because there's just that level of, okay, I know I'm not knowledgeably doing anything wrong, but is my car in fully functioning order to where there's not going to be an issue?
Mm-hmm. But why is it that we have that feeling with a police officer behind us? Okay. True. Okay. So next question on the docket. Do you want approval from your parents or peers? Why?
In healthy families.
In healthy families, yes. I agree, in healthy families. Charlie?
Yes.
Why? Why do you want that approval?
Why do I personally want approval?
Why do you personally want that approval?
Because that's one of the primary ways that I feel loved.
Okay.
Is approval from others.
Okay, so if they're doing
words
something,
of affirmation and things like that.
Yep. So if you're doing something they don't like, if you're doing something they don't like, would you stop?
Yes.
Why?
Kathy Ann, do you want the mic?
Just do it again.
Ask the question again.
If you're doing something they don't like, are you going to stop, and why would you stop?
I think it's the same answer as for your employer. It's a different level of respect, but it's also like same in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
That like if you're, like you say, in a good family and you're getting approval and affirmations and things like that, you're more apt to listen when they ask you to stop doing things.
Yep. Crystal?
So my family isn't healthy, and since I've become a Christian, I do not seek their approval anymore. I know that if I'm following the scripture, then God's approval is the only approval that I need. So I know if I'm being good, then it's okay. But I do know that there are things that I do that bother my family, and I always rebelled against it. And always pushed against it and didn't listen to them. But now I do, and it gets easier, but it's not every day to stop doing something when they ask. I can just find a different way to do it that's more acceptable to them.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Sonia?
For me, I don't want to hurt somebody else because I know what it feels like to be hurt. So if I'm made aware that I'm doing something that I'm not supposed to be doing that is bothering or annoying to somebody or hurting that person, then I try my hardest not to do it because I know what it feels like. I've had that done to me, the pain and the hurt and stuff. So that's my reason on why I wouldn't do it.
So you stop because you care about the person. You know there's something that the person doesn't like, so you stop because you care.
Correct. Correct. Because okay. I have that love, I have that compassion, that care.
Cool.
Well, I guess this is confession time, is because when I was growing up as a young child, I was very, very mischievous. And I didn't do as I was told many, many, many times. But I had a very too loving mom and a dad. And my dad had the calmest nature of sitting down in front of me and just calmly saying, I want you to explain to me what was wrong with what you did today. And I made the mistake one day of saying, which one? But, you know, in looking back at that, that was all the affirmation and all I needed, because he cared enough in his very, very busy lifestyle to sit down in front of me and explain what was wrong with how I was feeling and doing and did. So.
Okay, so with all these questions and these answers that came out, does anybody have an idea of where we're getting to? Besides my family.
Obedience.
That's a huge part of it. But there's something that comes that drives that obedience.
Realizing that God is always with you and always watching you.
That's a big part of it. Yes. Yes, that's exactly it.
Can you repeat it? Repeat what you said.
No, just reverence. Here, talk on it for a minute.
It's when you revere someone or something, holding them to a higher standard than yourself, wanting to show them your utmost character. Yeah, I guess that's okay. How I would elaborate.
Yep. So there's a lot of times where, I mean, when it comes to family members, when it comes to bosses, we know that a boss holds the ability to hire us, to fire us, to let us go at any time. We understand that if we do things right or wrong, there's going to be actions and consequences to it on each one of our moves and what we decide to do. When we have a police officer, we know that they can give us a ticket. With a parent, you know, we know that we're driving a piece, going further away from them if we do something that they don't like, that they don't want us to. We're driving a wedge that goes in between. But if we do it right, we have that reverence, that understanding, that fear, that we know that if I do something, there's going to be consequences to my actions. And likewise, there's so many times where God is asking us to do stuff throughout His Word. Some of the times we're just throwing it off and we're brushing off because we don't have that care in that area. It's just like, okay, well, I'm going to obey this piece, and this piece, but this piece I just don't care about. I'm going to drop it off to the wayside. We have such reverence for people and a fear for people and what that can cause in our lives, but we don't have that always for the Lord in every aspect of what we do. He's always there. He's always consistently watching us. But we don't view Him as we view people. We view people a lot of times higher than what we view God because they can make an immediate impact in our life now. And I tell you what, God can as well, but we just don't view Him that same way. We should view Him as the Creator that He is. He's given all of us purpose, and it's up to us to decide where we're going to take that level. And with that being said, you know, God has been on me for a long time trying to get me to follow that direction. I like when Joel was talking about Moses last week and how 40 years in the wilderness it took him to get his head around his insufficiencies and not being good enough and not being able to speak in front. I mean, Moses was talking with God. I can't do it. I can't do this. And while I'll send Aaron with you, I'm still not getting. And he's having this battle, and he goes on for 40 years in the wilderness before he even goes to rescue the people of Egypt. You know, and I was going back through some of my stuff this week, and I'm just looking at it, and I'm just going like, you know, God, if I were to have not just listened to Your Word and read Your stuff, but actually obeyed it and went with what You were telling me, the impact that could have been made is huge. And I can't look at it now as, well, it's just all done and all was me, but I can look at it now as I can move from this point on, I can move different in my life. I can. And so this is something that he gave me when I was in ninth grade. I wrote it down, and I'm gonna read it, and just keep in mind it was written in ninth grade. The Beginning of Wisdom is what it was titled. As I go through the Bible, I come across this verse. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. After reading that verse, my mind starts to think, how can I fear a God who is so kind and forgiving? Then I come across another verse. Don't be impressed with your own wisdom. Instead, fear the Lord and turn your back on evil. Then I finally understood, we should fear the Lord with all our heart. If we fear God with all our heart and keep Him the number one priority in our life, we will refrain from doing evil. For on the day of judgment, the Lord can say to us, no to us, that He does not know us. There's one big misunderstanding, though. People say that God sends us to total damnation. But within the Bible, it says it is our laziness, it is our stubbornness not to accept God. It is our laziness saying, I will talk to Him later. It is our selfishness that sends us to hell, not God. All too often, people say that they are Christians, but only take time for Christ on the day of Sunday and live dead to Christ the rest of the week. The truth is, those are the people who will plead for the Lord to let them into heaven on the day of judgment. But God will say, there are so many times where you could have talked to me, you could have prayed to me in my name, but only on the day of Sunday did you even think about me. You consistently put me aside in your life. Because of this, I don't know you. Go now. You will then be taken into the pits of hell, being dragged by the demons in hell. If we say we are Christians, we should act like it. We should fear the Lord our God and turn our back on evil. For once we do, our evil ways will come to a stop. We will then grow even closer to God than ever before. We will finally be able to let our hearts and minds open up. We will gather all the information in the Bible just as we can, just so we can live like the Lord wants us to. This is exactly why we get knowledge when we receive the wisdom the Lord has to offer, and why wisdom is so important. God loves us so much, He gave His only Son so we could be saved. Take the love that God has to offer and be saved. Be smart and accept Jesus Christ into your hearts. So, with that, we're going to move into the later part of this sermon area. So fear, when the Bible talks about fear, a lot of times it's talking about a reverence and awe of God. Sometimes it's talking about an actual fear and knowing that if we have messed up and done wrong, we're not in proper standing with God, and the distance between Him and us grows further away. So I've got one more question. One more question. When was humanity at its best?
When Jesus came to earth?
Before that.
When God created us.
At the very beginning in the Garden of Eden. The very beginning in the Garden of Eden. That is when humanity was at its best, because sin had not yet crept into the world. And it was when that all changed, obviously, is when Eve decided that she wouldn't quite listen to God, because she had this other entity. She had Satan speaking into the certain serpent speaking in, and she had a choice whether or not she was going to listen to God and still have that reverence for what He was saying was true, right, and honest. And she made a choice on that day to say, I am going to take from the apple, I'm going to eat, I'm going to step into sin. And that is when the earth was cursed and we were no longer at one with God the way that He intended us to be. Now it is because of Christ and what He did that He was drawing us back to that, because throughout that, between from that point on, He was always trying to constantly get us to follow, and nobody would. And the power wasn't there, and the chains of sin was completely wrapped around His people. No matter how much they'd go for a little bit and they'd be pulled right back. They'd go for a little bit and be pulled right back. And it's the same thing that a lot of us do, is we go a little bit and we get pulled right back. And it's because we don't have that fear piece, that understanding that our Father in heaven does hold the keys to life and death. He is the one that can slide us to and forth. He is a just God, but He's also a God of judgment. He is a God of love, but He is also a just God of judgment. Some statements that I have here. The fear of God is to know that God is real, and that He has put creation into motion, and we're a part of that. Being afraid of God causes us to run from Him. And I want to talk about a verse real quick where I see this. And it is in Exodus. It's Exodus 20:20. And there's so many verses in the Bible on the fear of God. It's just it just blows my mind that we don't talk about it more. Moses said to the people, and this is this one here, I think it was in the ESV version. Most of the other ones I have are in the King James Version. Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid, for God has come in order to test you, in order that the fear of Him may remain with you so that you may not sin. The fear of God is what keeps us from sin. A lot of us are trying to break free from the sinful habits, but we don't have the fear of God in us in order to keep us from that sin. Because we don't have that reverence and that thing of them that just like, man, I don't want to be afraid. I don't want to be apart from my father. I don't want to be apart from my dad. So we continue in this, and we don't have that honest being like, man, I don't want to do that. I don't want to get in trouble. So I'm going to continue in this because I can get away with it. So we slide into that, and we don't have that peace about us. If we want to break free from sin, we have to have that reverence of God, knowing that he's always there watching us and understanding of that. Freedom exists when the fear of God, not man, or loss of worldly possession drives our decisions. There's times that we have relationships in our lives, and those relationships, say if, let me throw this out there in this example. If we are alcoholics and we go to the bar every night with our friends, and we're like, well, I want to break free from this. Oh, I don't want to be an alcoholic anymore, but on the other hand, I don't want to stop hanging out with my buddies. I'm afraid I'm going to lose their friendship. And so that friendship drives us to continue doing what we've always done, and it keeps us into that habit of drinking, where instead of stepping aside from that and hanging out with the crowds that are going to encourage us not to drink, that encourage us to step away from that and become different people that God has called us to be, step away from those sinful acts until we become strong enough where we can go back and we can speak life. Because you won't be able to, you can't do it right away because you'll slip right back in. There's many times where the Bible talks about that. You can't be with these people because you're going to slip right into their sin. I want you to break free from them so you don't slip back in to your old ways. It's the same thing with us when we're trying to become the people that God has called us to be. We've got to be strengthened in the Lord. And that comes from knowing that if I do this, I'm going to be completely separated from God, and I don't want that. That's where that fear comes from, is knowing that one day there'll be a complete separation from God. And as we continue to step into this and we let him speak to us about, you know, hey, you know, this is how this is, and we start and we grow in strength and we grow in encouragement from him and through the others, that we can step over here and no longer say, okay, I'm going to become this if I step over and I'm going to talk to these guys because I'm speaking from a place of strength. I haven't drank in over 3 years, and I can now speak life into these people. And so it's understanding that if we want freedom, then nothing in this life, possessions, materials, friendships, none of that has a bearing on our eternity, except for our relationship with the Father. And our relationship with the Father is what drives us to that new beginning. And yes, relationships are important, as long as we're not keeping those relationships higher than what we keep God and his plans for us. We get the fire of God by walking in fear of God. We are to love and obey the Father's instructions. How does the fear of wrong things cripple us and keep us from growing? And this is kind of what I was talking a little bit about earlier, I guess, is if we're afraid to lose something, say if we have a hobby that we really like, but God wants us to do something different, just like my bowling. We'll go back to that. My bowling and the other. So and let's go into a deeper part of that. Let's go into something even more deeper than any of that. I wanted to be somebody who succeeded at something. I wanted to be somebody successful. I wanted to bowl my 300, you know. I wanted to become somebody that could say, man, I did that, you know, and I can do that. But none of that mattered. It really didn't. But I tried to be something that God didn't want me to be, you know. And that drove me further away from him instead of closer to him. And when I'm always trying to chase that, that's not being free. Being free is when I can listen to the Father and the Father gives me an instruction and I can do it and knowing that nothing else around matters except for I'm doing what the Father has told me to and I have a place in eternity. And because I no longer have to worry. I no longer have to be afraid of anything else on this earth when I'm following and listening to my Father's instructions. So I just want to kind of read some of the verses on that talk about the fear of the Lord, and I'll just kind of end it at that. Matthew 28, 26. Whatever I tell you in dark, speak in the light, and whatever you hear in your ear, preach on the housetops, and do not fear those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both body and soul in hell. Both soul and body in hell. Acts 9:31. Then the churches throughout all Judea, Galilee, and Samaria had peace and were edified. And walking in the fear of the Lord and in the comfort of the Holy Spirit, they were multiplied. Romans 3:18. There is no fear of God before their eyes. And I just kind of put a note on here. The people he was talking about had mouths full of cursing. And so basically, yeah. Yep. So the biggest thing is that's how they were because they didn't have the fear of the Lord. And then in the Old Testament, there was something that was almost the same. I think I had it after that one. What one was it? Let's see. Oh, yeah, Psalms. Psalms 36, 1 through 3. An oracle within my heart concerning the transgression of the wicked. There is no fear of God before his eyes. For he flatters himself with his own eyes. When he finds out his iniquity and when he hates, the words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. So, two examples, both Old and New Testament. And I'm telling you guys, this is the fear of the Lord is scattered throughout Old and New Testament. And there's many examples like this. What happens if you don't have that fear and reverence in awe for the Lord? And if you do. Moses, or Psalms 19:9. I love this one. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. It's the fear of the Lord is clean. When I read that, I just think, you know, when we fear the Lord, our bodies is cleansed because we're no longer living on ourselves, but we're listening, we're honing into his voice, and we're becoming the people he's called us to be. We're in oneness with him, just as he called us to be. You know, be one with the Father as I am one with the Father. And he's called that, and we can't be that without the fear of God. We can't move to the next step. We can't move to that deeper level without this peace. Isaiah 11, 1 and 3. So this piece was an interesting piece. There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and the branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. His delight is in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge by sight of his eyes. So that, the reason that drew interest is because it talked about the spirit of knowledge of the fear of the Lord. And it's talking about Jesus there in that section because it's talking about the stem of Jesse. So that's I'll leave it at that. There's a lot of verses, and I encourage everybody to go through and to read and to think about what it means to actually fear the Lord and have reverence for Him. Because we can show up to Sunday all we want. We can show up to church all we want. We can read the Bible all we want. We can be in prayer all we want. And none of it matters if we don't have that fear and reverence and awe for the Lord. It's all in vain if we don't. Because this is what drives us to be in that relationship, that pure relationship with Him. John?
Eve took the fruit, but Adam, because of his lack of fear of God, chose to participate in the fruit with Eve.
Yep, exactly. Andrea?
Obviously, do it or know it or whatever, but God should have fear. We should have the fear of the Lord as our ultimate Savior and everything. We can't do anything without Him. But I do want to, you touched on something, and I had some words that I wanted to share. And I want people to really think, because this is just a little nugget, because sometimes we rely on this building to be what takes us to that level with God. We rely on Sunday mornings to be that thing that gets us to the next level. So I just want to, sorry if I lose my voice. If there are 365 days in a year, that makes it 52 Sundays where we go to the house of the Lord. And service is only 2 hours long. That is the equivalent of 4.3 days a year spent in church, focusing on God, learning about God, worshiping God, praying to God if you do nothing outside of this house. 4.3 days a year. That is not even 1 week devoted to God out of a year. That is why it is so important to be doing things outside of this church, building your relationship with God. I do not think that you, if you do not know who God is, and I mean truly know Him in your heart, you cannot have fear for Him. If you don't know what His characteristics are, you cannot fear Him. And in order for us to quit doing the things that take us away from Him, we have to know Him. We have to know the things that keep us from what He has for us, what He has for the people around us. And it all goes back to having a relationship.
That's right.
It all goes back to hearing, believing in what you hear, rather in His word or through your relationship with Him, and then obeying it.
Yep.
Because I really don't think we, like when we talked and shared about our parents or people that are placed in a place of authority, those are things that are common knowledge. Our parents, we've grown up with a relationship with them, so we know to fear them because we've done things, they've corrected us, we've done things corrected us. And so without having that knowledge of who God is, it's very hard to fear Him. So I would challenge each of you to know who He is, to dig who He is, see what His character is. Because coming here 2 hours a week isn't going to get it.
Nope, it's not.
And we are not going to have anything, because truthfully, and we can sit there and say, well, so-and-so helped me learn. Well, that's great, but when it comes to the end of your life, it's not going to be that person standing next to you with the Lord. It's going to be you, and God's going to say, what did you do with your time? What did you do with your talents? How much did you pursue me on your own? You know, and I don't know. I just thought that was huge to think about that, you know, that 4.3, you know, that's not very much. No. And sometimes this is the only thing that people have or that they choose to have to get closer to God. So I just want to challenge everybody because, man, when you think about everything in that Bible, he took imperfect people and he did miraculous things with them because they turned their focus toward him. They learned how to have fear of God.
That's right.
They learned how to, you know, change their habits and their, you know. So I don't know. That's just a challenge I want to put out there. Mm-hmm.
Trace, we just put some music on, please. I don't want to belabor a point because you guys have hammered it well, but I will just say that this ties into our word for 2025, which is abide. Mm-hmm. Right? Abide. You cannot abide if you do not have that reverence. And I want to, so Trace is going to put some music on, and we'll open the altar up. If you need a word on this, I want you to come up and see Mike. There's another aspect of this that it's funny that, you know, I heard this week, I was listening to John Bevere. So John Bevere, you guys, a lot of him, you know him, you've read his books, or we've done the Driven by Eternity series. And he was talking about a time in his life where he was struggling to get into the presence of God. Right, he just felt like his prayers were hitting the ceiling, you know, didn't feel like he was connected at all. And then the Holy Spirit dropped this word in him, and it goes right along with this fear, but more so towards the awe. So then he starts his prayer time with, God, you are so awesome. God, look at the works of your hands. God, you are so mighty. Just heaping that reverence and speaking it aloud, and even now, I could start to feel the Spirit just by doing that. So I would encourage you, if you are in that place where you are feeling stuck, to chase after that awe side of the reverence and see what God does in your personal prayer time.